Welcome to Share the Bytes, Episode 6, Questions about Open Source.
Hello? Hi, this is Grant Bowman.
Hi, this is Bethany Doolin.
Hi, I'm Ian Lin. We're here at the DV Lug, the very first podcast in beautiful Walnut Creek, California. And it's just the group of three of us here, but just wanted to start this and talk about all sorts of things, Linux, open source, and technology in general. So if you're listening to this and you ever make your way down to California, we'd love to have you here. We meet, I believe, the second and fourth Fridays of every month. Yep. Grant is nodding his head, so I must be right, at 7 p.m. at Cafe La Scala on North Main Street.
Where's the... Do we have an address that we can see?
Nope. But if you check out the website, and what's the website, Grant?
The website is dvlug.org, dvlug.org. It's 1655 North Main Street at the corner of Civic in Walnut Creek.
Very nice. So, I understand you have a topic to discuss, and you're working on a couple of posts for the Berkeley Lug, which we also meet at on Sundays.
Yep, that's the second and fourth Sunday of the month. So we are synchronized now, our schedules.
Outstanding. So what's the one post you're working on? Something about open source?
Yeah, the post that I'm working on is trusting open source. It's a basic topic for people that really is the beginning. If you don't trust open source, you're not going to use it. So that was kind of the topic I had in mind for this meeting, after we get introductory things out of the way. Did you want to say a few things about how we got here, maybe?
Of the podcast or the...
Yeah, and the group.
Yeah, and the group. Well, I mean, I've been... Actually, it's kind of interesting that you asked that question, because I was thinking about this on my way over. In 1 month, I will have been coming to DV Lug for a full year now.
Awesome.
Yep. Congratulations. So, happy anniversary.
Yes, thank you very much. Well, not quite there yet. Got one more month to go.
Well, that's a third of the time we've been here, because it's just over 3 years that we've been doing this.
Yeah.
In one form or another.
Yeah. And so I met you at the Berkeley Lug, and we've been doing a few projects together and helping out. We just did the Makers Faire with the Berkeley Lug group.
Great success.
Yeah, and a lot of fun.
Very successful.
Yeah. And you know, for the DV Lug here, we've had some very interesting members come and visit us. What was kind of interesting to see is you get people of all ages, ranges, experiences, sharing what they want to know, and it's just casual hangout. And I think it's a really nice way to spend a Friday evening.
Yeah, the idea behind DV Lug is really that it's an informal discussion about whatever people would like to talk about, and whatever people are interested in, they can bring it to the team, bring it to the meeting of whoever's here, and we can discuss it and share ideas. A lot of us have experience in a lot of different versions of Linux and a lot of different software, so we usually can have some kind of reasons, perspective, and if not, well, we just do a lot of Googling, just like anybody else does, and figure out sort of what's going on.
Exactly. I mean, we just tried to fix a problem with your laptop just before, and we hopefully found the answer on Google. It seems that you're running Ubuntu 10.10, correct?
Nope, it's the LTS. It's
the LTS.
Ubuntu 10.04.
10.04, okay. But it seems that the Ubuntu has a power save mode for the Wi-Fi NIC when you unplug it. I mean, that's a great feature, but the problem you were having is it was just constantly disconnecting.
I'm not sure if that was a problem or not, but we certainly tried the solution, and we'll see if it makes it better.
Yeah, I hope so.
Yeah, so I'm still on the previous LTS on my laptop, just because I'm lazy about upgrading. I have another machine where the 1204, the new LTS that was just released a few months ago, is running, and I've been experimenting with that as well, the new Unity interface, and we give a presentation at Baylug. I gave a presentation with Elizabeth Crumbach, who's on the Ubuntu Community Council.
Okay.
And so we talked about 1204.
Yeah. Now, does that group meet regularly also?
Yep, that's a monthly meeting. There's quite a few Bay Area meetings in the Bay Area, about Linux in general and technical topics and specifically. And I try and make them to, I try and get around to a few of them from time to time. Met a lot of people, and it's been a wonderful experience meeting all these people and learning from just a huge range of topics.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, Berkeley Lug is one of the more formal ones. It meets monthly. They have a dinner. And,
Berkeley Lug or Bay Lug?
Bay Lug,
yeah.
So, yeah, Bay Lug is a little more formal. They have topics, they have speakers that they bring in, they have dinner, and then a formal presentation with slides and things like that. Berkeley Lug is more informal at Bobby G's Pizzeria on 2nd and 4th Sundays, just like we're on the 2nd and 4th Fridays. So I hope with this podcast we'll be able to reach more people.
Yeah, exactly. And again, I mean, Grant, you and I are real techno files. I mean, with the laptops, the phones, Android, you know, Ubuntu, Linux Mint for me, you name it. But I mean, you don't, I mean, Beth, I mean, you came and joined us. Are you an Android programmer or anything like that?
Oh, you want to know my history? I just learned Linux when I was broke. When my husband was going to use a PhD at Berkeley, he taught me, and I swung those into a web developer position. So I've used those on and off, and eventually at one point went into sales and marketing. And now I sort of work with Grant on a variety of different projects.
So how did you get involved with TV Live? Did you just see it on the website? Did you know Grant or somebody else, a friend of a friend?
Well, Cafe La Scala is a very interesting place. It's actually a hotbed for a lot of intellectual activity, and there's a lot of people from all over the Bay come meet here. So through meeting various different people, eventually I met Grant. I was introduced to the Diablo Valley Linux Users Group and invited to join, and I have been a faithful member ever since.
And I know you right now you're helping Grant with the new website that's being put together. And can you talk about that? You know, what's going on with the website?
Well, we have been revising the website, both artistically as well as developing the blog that we're going to be using to get information out there. We are basically just promoting a lot of topics, things to reach people, getting our finger on the pulse of what's out there so we can bring people into the meeting and just get focused on what people are interested in.
We've been meeting pretty much weekly for the last 3 years. And so changing that topic, that format, was important to a lot of people because they couldn't get here at 6 o'clock. It's also on a Friday, so again, people couldn't get here all the time. So we kept it on Fridays, but we moved it to 7 o'clock to be able to include more people and give people a chance to come. We're looking at different ways to reach subsets of the technical community here in the Bay Area, specifically Contra Costa, where I grew up. And the reason I started DB Lug with some friends, Robert Wall, and some other folks, was to really provide people a forum where they could talk about technical topics in an informal way and help each other. We didn't have that in the Bay Area really until DB Lug that I know of. At least I couldn't find it. I looked. I was traveling around the Bay Area looking for other groups that are similar, but I wanted something a little closer to home, and I wanted something a little more frequently than once a month.
Yeah.
So that's where DB Lug came from.
Excellent. Excellent. Outstanding. So what kind of projects, I mean, that are you doing with DB Lug? I mean, you're involved in a whole bunch of stuff, and what have you been able to take out of DB Lug, with the people you've met and the projects you've been able to get involved with? Because, I mean, it's not just one meeting that just meets. I mean, we do meet and we hang out, talk about technology and, you know, just random stuff, you know, trying to touch base with people, but, you know, things grow out of this. I mean, I know with Berkeley Lug, we did the big Makers Fair down in San Mateo, and again, yeah, you were there along with other people within the Linux community to help out Beth. Yeah,
it was definitely, yeah. Makers Fair, also Canonical. I was invited to
the Ubuntu Developer Summit
where I met Mark Shuttleworth and John O'Bacon and a variety of other really wonderful people. So this group just really, if you use it properly, you can meet some very incredible people, very productive people.
So other projects have grown out of this meeting, people you've met and ideas you've shared, you'd say?
A lot of what we've done has been informal support. We've had some startups try and start up from various members that have attended at different times. We've had people from Safeway and other companies in the area that do technical work come and share some ideas. We're changing the format now because every summer there's a lull in attendance. And so we wanted to reach other communities, specifically groups like web developers, which arguably, you know, some of the talk on the internet is that web development really is kind of the focus of the internet these days, and reaching out to groups that are specifically targeting those technologies might be beneficial both to the people in this area as well as our group to expand the membership.
Very good. Now, we started our discussion today in long before we started recording this podcast, but about open source. I mean, that's the whole point about Linux and the technologies, is sharing what you know. And so you're working on a particular posting for the Berkeley Lug users group about open source. Now, what particularly, why are you writing this post to begin with? I mean, why, people know about open source, and there's the idea of, is it Linux versus Windows or versus Mac? I don't really see it as a versus. I mean, it's a different subset, but Linux is an interesting tool. But what's driven you to want to talk about open source, and more importantly, you're saying trusting open source? What is that about?
It was 1996 when I was involved with Silicon Valley Public Access Link, a nonprofit ISP that's still sustainable today. It's down in Santa Clara County. Linux right then wasn't as mature as it used to be, as it is now, excuse me. And so that's my first exposure to open source and sort of the freeware movement before it and things like that. It's developed quite a lot since then. In 1999, I started working with a company called SUSE, which is a German-based company. I was working here in the Bay Area, in Oakland, promoting a commercial open-source distribution, Linux distribution. And I'm writing this article now just to try and get back to our roots and reevaluate sort of what other people perceive about open source and why it's so difficult to explain. Because I've had a lot of difficulties explaining it to new people, what open source is and what it's about, and there's no company behind it, and you know, what's all this about? With enough eyes, you know, all bugs look shallow. What's that about? And so understanding the development model is kind of the basis to begin trusting anything, and specifically this open source project.
I remember when I was first introduced to Linux and the idea of open source, and what I first read, I thought it was, oh, open source means free, i.e. it's free to take, I can free whatever I can do.
Freeware, right?
Yes,
yeah.
Freeware. But that's not necessarily true, is it?
Well, yeah, Richard Stallman started what became the open source movement, and really, in the beginning, he still calls it free software. But there was a group of people that got together and had a meeting, and they said, you know, that gives the wrong connotations, free software. It gives the wrong message to people that haven't heard it before. It gives them an impression of cheap and shoddy and zero money ever. Which all are very impressions.
Yeah, so if you're not paying for something, i.e. you're not making money off of it, it can't be all that great of quality.
Right. And so the idea was to try and change it and to describe also the methodology a little bit. Being it open means that the source code is available. The source part is pretty obvious for any coder. A source means the programming that gets compiled into the binary or the thing that runs on your computer if you're using a compiled language. So open source is pretty descriptive, and it was a pretty obvious moniker that was taken up very quickly by the community and Linux and Apache communities and other people to describe what they were already doing in this free software movement that Linux came along and completed with its kernel. All the other pieces that were already in the GNU operating system.
Yeah, and people might think Linux is open source, but what is Linux? But really there's a lot of things out there that is open source that people probably have heard of and are familiar with. I mean, what are some open source projects out there that maybe the mainstream knows of or uses every day, in fact?
One of the most popular open source products on the planet right now is Firefox. It's one of the best browsers available on any platform to use to access the internet. Another one would be OpenOffice. Well, it's actually been forked, and LibreOffice is the new name for the main effort. The Apache web server is very popular on the server side, but not so much on the consumer side.
Now, Apache web server, for people listening to this podcast, maybe not be completely technically familiar, that's what's running the back end for hosting of the web pages.
Exactly. Websites, the www.dblog.org, there's a piece of software that responds to that request from your browser that provides the information that you're requesting. Yeah, now, and that is Apache.
Yeah, and who's using Apache for the web servers? Any big names?
Yeah, actually the adoption rate of Apache mirrors and matches the adoption rate of the internet itself. So anybody that's big on the internet is using Apache, essentially.
Wow.
They grew up all together.
Okay. So, Bethany, what's your familiarity with open source? I mean, or particularly like FUD. I mean, we talk about FUD as fear, uncertainty, and doubt. And that's kind of going to the heart of your topic, the posting, Grant's posting, is how do you trust open source? So, I mean, have you heard things about open source technology or what's out there? Is it good, bad, anything from your perspective?
There's some pretty wacky people involved in open source, I think, sometimes.
Yeah.
I think FUD is probably a good word to use. I think there's a lot of fear of the unknown.
Uh-huh.
And so I was really interested in talking to Grant more about what prompted him to choose the subject of trust, because I think that really going to be the basis of getting other people involved. I think it's a really wise topic to bring open.
Yeah, so I wanted to talk about this because if you don't trust a product, you're not going to use it. That's true with software, that's true with other things as well. And so what I've been trying to do for many years now is try to describe and to try and explain to people what this open source stuff is about. And it's not so much sales as it is describing and giving people a frame of reference for something that's so different. Because essentially there's two major models that people point to as being representative of kind of polar opposites. The commercial model, being a company that hires people to work on a software project, and they're the only ones that actually see the source code. And they make a product, and they put it in shrink wrap, and they put it in Best Buy, and people go in and pay their money, and that's how they get their software. That's one model. It wasn't the first model, and I don't think it's the oftentimes the best model, depending on what you want to do.
Uh-huh. So what would you use open source for? I mean, is it just people in their garage programming for philanthropic reasons, or do companies use it in order to make money per se, because they see it as an engine to grow their company, get bigger, bring in more customers? I mean, are there examples of that? And how would you use open source in that regard?
Well, 9 out of 10 financial transactions are actually conducted on Linux and open source software already. That was in a video that is actually on the DVLUG website, put out by the Linux Foundation. They did some research into this. And they described how Linux was created and the source code model and where it's used a bit. Companies like Google grew up with open source and wouldn't be the same without the open access to the source code that allowed them to do the modifications they do to make Google different from a standard small Apache website like DVLUG. So there's a lot of people that use open source. It's been more popular on the server than it has been on the desktop, so people aren't maybe as aware of it. The Linux distribution that I use is called Ubuntu.
or Ubuntu, and it is probably the most popular Linux distribution that people use hands-on, because it's growing from the Debian distribution, which is a very strong technical base, very strong technical community, and then grows and tries to bring this technology and this power to human beings. Linux for human beings was the tagline for a long time. And Canonical, being the commercial sponsor of Ubuntu, has really helped grow that. Mark Shuttleworth being the founder of both the Ubuntu project and of a company called Canonical behind it. And so a lot of what we talk about is actually open source that we use on our laptops in various forums. Linux Mint is a derivative of Ubuntu. The Red Hat Enterprise Linux is another version of Linux that comes from a Linux distribution called Fedora. So a lot of this history kind of gets all wrapped up, and people think they need to know all about all this history, and yet they don't. They just need to know kind of the basics of what it's structured like. And then, you know, to know that Fedora is run on 3.1 million laptops, OLPCs, little green laptops all around the world, that's kind of icing on the cake.
Yeah.
And it's not really relevant to what people do day-to-day on their laptop, even though it's really cool, I think, being involved with the OLPC project, the One Laptop Per Child project, is exciting to me. It's not exciting to everybody, and they don't have to know that.
It's one of those things where, I mean, when I try to talk about Linux to people who are unfamiliar with it, they might have some idea, and they say, oh, yeah, Linux is that operating system that you download. It's free, so it must not be well-supported. And I think that's one of the biggest misnomers about open source software, is that it receives little support, or they can't trust it because it doesn't come from like some big brand name per se, i.e. like Apple or Microsoft. Now the question is that true in any way? I mean, do people have a legitimate concern of not receiving support for open source software, whether it be Linux or the Apache server or some other open source type software? Again, I mean, if I'm not paying you to fix something, then what's the incentive for you to fix it?
Richard Stallman back in the 70s was frustrated with a printer that he couldn't modify. He didn't have the source code. Back in those days, it was kind of different. Computing was very different. There weren't any desktops or laptops, certainly. They were all mainframe computers. And so this experience soured him to the commercial way of doing software. I am a Microsoft Windows certified professional, MCP, Microsoft Certified Professional.
So you're not saying don't use Windows at all, right?
No, not at all.
Yep.
I think that every operating system has its place.
Yep, a right tool for the right job.
Exactly. I had an experience where this corporate finance department couldn't print. In this case, it was PowerPoint. And we didn't have the source code. And we tried all these various things, and we couldn't get it working. And this is before I worked at SUSE. And so finally, you know, we did all this work, and we narrowed it down. And then magically, it started working again with a new version that came along. And all of our work was, you know, for nothing. It was down the drain. And it was because the commercial model didn't allow us to debug any further. But we didn't have controls that we needed to get our jobs done with the software that was given to us. So we had to wait for the new version. So
what you're saying is that with the proprietary code, you were unable to make the modifications needed in order to get the job done because it was locked down. And you had to wait for the support in that case, but whereas you went to the open source software, you were able to, I mean, the adjustments were able to make very quickly. There weren't any particular restrictions.
I think there's a sliding scale between skill
and
money and trust with commercial companies. If you have more skill, if you have a lot of technical people that can build things from the ground up, you don't need as much support from other people. You already have the support inside. It's about where those people exist, within your organization or your group or your friends or whatever, or outside of that. How do you contract to get that kind of support? I had a problem with an internet connection. Some people were coming into our internet server, and we couldn't do anything about it. We called up Microsoft. We got an executive support trouble ticket. We paid a few $100s, and we debugged it, and they said, yep, you've got a problem. And then they said, we're going to refund your money because we can't solve it, so have fun.
Okay.
If that's the kind of support that people really want, they can have it. It didn't help me in that case.
Yeah.
So how, I don't know how many people have actually used the support that is touted to be going along with these commercial products, but sometimes it's not all it's cracked up to be.
Oh. No, but have you ever had any experiences where you had to rely on support from a software vendor or anything where something wasn't working for you? Maybe not even software, maybe hardware or whatever it is. But because of the nature of it, like in Grant's case, was there ever the case where you felt that you couldn't move forward with what you wanted to do because you had to rely on something else?
Have you ever felt stuck because of technology?
There we go. That's simplified. Thank you very much.
If I ever see something that says to call a number if I need help, I almost immediately shut down.
Now, why is that? I mean, the support help line is there for a reason.
So there's a 90% chance that it will not be that helpful.
Have you had that bad experience? Oh, my goodness.
You're working in the IT industry.
It's better to find a way on my own, and I feel better about my own, to find a way to do something than it is to make it. And it might cost me money, too.
There are commercial options for open source that not a lot of people know about. Canonical does provide, I should look it up. I think it's $60 a year for a support contract on a desktop machine.
So if you have the skill, you can fix it yourself, but if you still want support from people who actually designed it, you can pay for that as well. But
right.
They don't restrict you in any way.
Right. And having the source code means that not only can you fix it, but you can also contract with a third party. Anybody that has a skill, you can contact with them, you can contract with them, you can get your software,
now,
even if that company goes away.
Now, would you say that actually improves the trust relationship between a business and a consumer? That if they open up and they say, we trust you to do with our product as you want, because maybe you want to tweak something, or you want to figure it out for yourself, redesign it, or fix, but we're still here to help them. Do you think that opens up an avenue and saying, oh, wow, they're open enough that I can do this? Does that help in the trust factor?
Yeah, when a company like Google says that all of our desktops are going to be running Ubuntu, that says a lot. When companies like IBM say they're going to invest $1 billion in Linux and open source over time frame that they announced a long time ago, actually, that makes a big difference in the regular community. Different people have different technical skills and capabilities, and so they're going to try and find the right mix of support and knowledge and things for their needs. So.
Wrapping up, talking about open source, trusting open source.
So I think there's still a ways to go. I think that more people are understanding what Mozilla and Firefox can do, even on their Windows machine, and OpenOffice can do, running open source applications in addition to open source operating systems like Linux distributions and Ubuntu.
Yeah, because again, open source doesn't mean just Linux, it's open source software which runs on Windows, Mac, and Linux.
Right, some do, yeah. Yeah, there's some great examples. There's a graphics image manipulation program called GIMP. There's Audacity, which is a good sound editor. There's lots of good applications out there that are open source. So we're wrapping it up here at DV Lug for the evening, though.
Yeah, and so, I mean, if people are interested in open source technologies, Linux in general, they can find us at Cafe La Scala every other Friday, 2nd and 4th of the month at 7 p.m.
As a matter of fact, what I'd like to bring up is what we're going to talk about on the 2nd Friday of next month.
Oh, yes.
Well, Grant is one of the proud owners of Raspberry Pi. Can you talk a little bit about that, Grant?
Sure. We had one donated to Partimus, one of the Raspberry Pis, and I've been doing some testing. And we're actually going to be raffling it off. I'm going to not have it for very much longer. So we can still talk about it, though, and some of our experiences. It was a great hit at the Maker Faire, and we hope that people that are interested will show up and come here and talk about the Raspberry Pi and sort of the $35 computer that is sweeping the internet with the potential for education.
Yep, and what's the date on that we have set?
Date on that is July 13th, Friday, July 13th at 7 p.m.
Outstanding. So hopefully we get a lot of people there that can come see the Raspberry Pi. We're going to record another podcast for that one, get some feedback. And if you have any questions, yeah, come check us out at dblug.org. And then you'll also find Grant and myself also at Berkeley Lug as well.
BerkeleyLug.com is the website there.
.com or .org?
.com.
It is .com, okay.
Yeah.
So again, you can be a .com and be a lug as well.
That's true.
All right, well, thanks for everybody listening. Hope you enjoyed the podcast. We're going to try to get as many out there as we can. And we always welcome feedback.
Thank you very much.
All right, thank you.
Bye.